This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else. This is The Stinking Truth. Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome in to the Stinking Truth Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for subscribing. Numbers are growing continually. Please share it with all your friends and family. If you love it, if you don't like it, keep your freaking mouth shut. I am Mark Schlereth. He is Mike Evans. Mike, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. We got a lot to get to, a lot of topics, as we're only about a couple of weeks away from NFL draft.
Okay, but before we get to that, how about Space Nerd yesterday? Did you get a load of Space Nerd yesterday?
The eclipse?
Oh, my gosh.
Space Nerd
on TV.
Okay.
So my wife's got the news on, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to start now. It's a golden ring. It's a golden ring. Like, shut up, Space Nerd. Like, okay, I get it. The moon gets in front of the sun. Boom, there's a shadow. Hey, well, why don't we know? Hey, let's get a shot of a cloud. Watch the cloud go in front of the sun. Look. Oh, it's gotten shady. Ooh, the temperature dropped.
Wait a minute.
Dude,
okay.
Give me a freaking break with Space Nerd.
I get that it was a little over the top at times. And
your
astronomers were going equal parts geeked out and snooty professor. You clearly don't know what you're watching. Let me explain it to you. I get all that.
Uh-huh.
But come on. The idea that it could go from bright sunshine to nighttime darkness in the span of a couple of minutes and then right back to daytime bright isn't something that you find interesting?
I've laid on the beach before. I've laid on the beach before in Hawaii, and it was bright sunshine, and then a big cloud blocked the sun.
It didn't get dark out, though.
And it got... Well, it got darker.
It didn't get dark.
It got nighttime dark. Dude.
Come on. Where's
boy.
Your sense of wonderment?
Did you not want to go out and just beat up a science kid? Like, did you not want to just go out and punch a science dude in the nose?
Well,
I did.
Come on. I hope we never get bored with the wonder of science.
With shadows? You ever chase your shadow? What are you, Peter Pan? Like, dude, I was like... I thought
What am I supposed to do with this guy?
I just thought it was ridiculous.
Although I would say this.
Was the coverage of it on national television not insanely stupid?
Well, it was stupid if you stuck with it once you saw it pass through one city. Like, I saw it when it went through Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. But then it goes to Indy. Then it goes to Cleveland. And then it ends up in... Houghton, Maine, or someplace like that. And if you, because at that point, you know what's coming. and you watch these announcers and how they react, you already know how they're going to react.
Well,
at that point, if you stuck with it that long, I could see how. But if you, you know, just caught a couple of places, I thought it was pretty cool.
I caught one broadcast. The guy was screaming, going on and on and on about the wedding ring and, oh, it was so beautiful. And then he stumbled when he was throwing it to break. He goes, you could see I'm emotional, like something like, I'm emotionally, like I'm a little bit lost for words right now with the emotion. I'm like, you got to be shitting me.
I mean,
what a pussy. Would we move on? And can we move on from Astro Boy?
Wow.
Lord have mercy. I apologize for my language.
You would not last long on the USS Enterprise because your interest in going where no man has ever gone before.
It did interest me enough to read an article. And I found one article really incredible that they've actually, with a high-powered telescope, they have actually found life on a planet.
Okay.
Yeah, they found corn in Uranus.
Corn in Uranus. I don't know whether to laugh or cry, people. I really don't.
Oh, that's a good one.
I really don't. That's
a good one.
That's a knee slapper right there. Okay. That's a knee slapper.
All right, are you ready? I've had my piece.
Are you ready to talk some football here?
Sure, why not?
This is why people come here, not for your takes on science. Space nerds.
Okay.
What do you call them, space nerds?
Space nerds. Space nerds. Astro space boys. Whatever they are, yeah.
Merrill Hodge, you know Merrill pretty well from your...
Hodge's my boy. Yeah, I love Merrill.
Your days?
Yeah.
At ESPN?
Idaho State, by the way. Merrill Hodge played at Idaho State. I played at Idaho.
So
rivals.
Let's establish his credentials, his bona fides. Is this a guy who you respect for the work he puts into evaluating players?
Absolutely.
Evaluating film?
Absolutely. When we worked together at ESPN, Merrill covered the draft, I mean, forever.
Okay.
And, dude, that dude nailed so many. Like, he would just come out and say, this dude's not going to play well at the NFL level. And he would be right. There were so many times he was just dead. I mean, just dead on.
So, against that backdrop, then, here's what he had to say about Drake May, who many people feel will either be the second or third quarterback off the board. He said, quote, Drake May is the kind of player that will get you fired. Especially if you draft him in the top five or top three, he's going to get you fired. I studied him for 2 years. I watched every one of his games last year. His last game against North Carolina State was probably the most embarrassing display I've seen from a guy who is supposed to be an elite franchise quarterback. He's erratic. He's everywhere.
Yeah. So you know that I evaluated Drake May. I didn't watch a year's worth of tape. I watched several games that he played. And my evaluation for you, as we do a local radio show here in Denver, Colorado, and we're talking about the draft all the time, and, you know, the Broncos are, you know, obviously minus a quarterback since they moved on from everybody's favorite Rusty, Russ Williams, or Russ, what's his name? Wilson.
Russell.
I hardly, yeah, I'll never forget you, Russell Williams.
You've moved on.
Oh, my Lord. Anyhow, so... What were we talking about?
Merrill Hodge.
Oh, yeah, Hodge. Yeah, Drake May. So, yeah, I looked at Drake May, and there was a couple of things that concerned me. One, I thought mechanically he was very loopy. He had long arm mechanics, right? Really loopy as he throws. And then two, I thought he was really inaccurate on underneath and intermediate throws. Just some really bad balls. Now, it's funny because you get into the national television kind of analysts, right? And they talk about some of the things that he can do. They talk about, oh, the big play over the top or the athleticism to scramble and the, you know, he threw the deep ball really well, all these things, right? And I would tell you that I'm more interested in a guy that can do the boring well. And he doesn't do the boring well. And I don't know how often a guy that can't execute the offense underneath and take the boring, take the stuff that gets you first downs, that keeps you on schedule, I don't know if that guy ever becomes great at that. See, people marvel at the things that happen three times a game. Oh my God, did you see that throw? He scrambled around, then he threw it. Like, we see it in the workouts all the time, right? The pro days. Oh my God, he was scrambling to the right, and he turned back. He threw it to the left, and it went 67 yards, and it was a perfect dime, you know? And we get all enamored. How many times does that happen a game versus what happens on a down-to-down, series-to-series? Like, that's what you do. And so what I get concerned about is a guy that can't do the boring well, because I don't know that that guy ever does the boring well. I have this rule about offense in general, and I call it the 70-30 rule, Mike. 70% of the time, we need to be on schedule. 30% of the time, we're off schedule, you need to make a play for us. So if that flat route at 6 yards is there, you take it 100% of the time, and you make it second down and 4 or second down and 5. And if you're off of that because maybe there's something better on number 2, then you're wrong 100% of the time. And I want to be on schedule, because if I'm living in third down and 2 minus or third down and 3 minus, I'll live for a long time. I'll be able to convert a lot of those. But if I'm living in third down and 7 plus, I'm in trouble. We're in trouble as an offense. And that 30% of the time, if that ratio is off, if you're a 50-50 quarterback, 50% of the time you're on schedule, 50% of the time you're off schedule, you will do more harm to your team than you will do good for your team. Meaning that, you know, more games are lost than won. And that's the problem I have with quarterbacks and the way we evaluate quarterbacks. We evaluate the things that jump off film as opposed to the boring. And the boring is what wins, and the boring is what keeps you on schedule, and the boring is what keeps drives alive.
So this Merrill Hodge critique of Drake May was certainly the most critical that I've heard. Right. But there's been enough smoke out there that would indicate that maybe Drake May's stock is dropping. Is this a case of legitimately the whole NFL community coming to a sentiment about Drake May? Or is this teams that maybe are back in the draft who really covet Drake May and are poisoning the well to move up in the hopes that Drake May slides to them?
Sure.
Does that really happen?
Yeah.
Because if it does, that's pretty shitty.
Yeah. No.
I mean, poisoning the well,
right,
messing with a guy's reputation, work ethic, all that kind of stuff, just in the hopes that he drops and you secretly love him.
Yeah.
That's BS.
Yeah, well, there's no
but
question.
But is it real?
Yeah, there's no
Could
question.
Could that be happening here?
There's no question that it probably is happening to a degree. There are some teams that have probably looked at Drake May and said, I don't like the mechanics. And just really quick, as a son that had, you know, or as my son was a pitcher, and I've been to all these pitching lessons, let me tell you what happens when you're long. When you're long in your mechanics, you're late. Okay, so for a pitcher that has repeated mechanics, what they always say is keep your front shoulder in, right? So you keep your front shoulder closed. And what ends up happening is that's where your power comes from. So when you're late or your arm lags behind your body, so your body's moving but your arm is lagging behind, what ends up happening is your body's natural reaction to get your arm through is to pull your head. So when you pull your head, what happens, instead of being in this position where you're really driving the ball, driving the football or the baseball, what happens is your arm gets longer as you do that. And when your arm gets longer because it's lagging behind, you're going to be inaccurate. So it either sails high and, like for a pitcher, high and wide, or you hold on to it too long and then it's down in the dirt. And the same is true for football players, for quarterbacks. When you get late, when you're late with the ball, it's impossible to be accurate, because now what ends up happening is you have to pull and you come off the ball, so you don't stay, your force does not stay behind the ball, right? You tend to get into, as opposed to being that Joel Klatt always says, it's a C thrower, you become a U thrower. I mean, your hand is under the ball. And when you do that, you sail the ball or you pull the ball. It's one of two things. But you can't be accurate if you're late. And you can't be on time if your mechanics are long.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that you know, everybody will try to fix. And I watched him in his pro day versus the film I watched in several games that I watched. And you could tell he's worked on his mechanics and tightened his mechanics up. But the bottom line is that's bullshit. It doesn't, like, you can do it in shorts and a T-shirt, but when you're under duress, it will always come back
muscle
to haunt
memory,
you.
Like muscle memory,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
It's a 10,000-hour rule. Yeah. So, but that's the issue with that. But will people poison the well? Will people? Yeah, I'm sure there's a group of franchise teams that really like him because he's got something that you can't coach. He's got arm talent, size, and athleticism, right? You can't coach that. You're either born with it or you're not. And so he's got all those things. And so, you know, the prevailing thought for a lot of teams is, well, we can coach him up on the rest of the stuff. And my thought is, really, you think? Because more often than not, you can't. There's very few guys that actually, you know, actually learn how to play the game when they get into the professional game. So, and then the other factor is, will people poison the well? Absolutely. Well, why do you think the Wunderlich tests get released? Because point. NFL, they're if they can get you for less money and they want you, will they besmirch your name? Absolutely, because a lot of them are turds.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So we're going to have possibly six quarterbacks go in the first round, right? Uh-huh. Caleb Williams, Daniels, McCarthy, May, Nix, Penix. Yeah. So we could have possibly six quarterbacks go in the first round. We know based on a solid 20-year history of drafting quarterbacks, most of these guys are going to be busts. Why? Why so many misses? Are you telling me that all these evaluators, these general managers, are you telling me that they're that stupid? Or is it something else?
Yeah. I think it's something else. You know, there's an old saying that hope is not a strategy. And I think there's a lot of hope with these franchises when it comes to that position. Well, let's just take him. Because nobody's going to criticize us for taking a quarterback because we need a quarterback. And if he fails, you know, wasn't our fault. We coached him up. He just couldn't play. He was never accurate enough. He was never whatever. You know, and so you get into these situations where it's kind of a cover your own ass mentality. Is, hey, listen, if we draft him and he fails, at least it gives us another 2 years to kick the can down the road before we get fired. Because if he fails, we're probably going to get fired anyhow. But at least it buys us a couple more years. And people get excited about having a brand new quarterback. They're excited right up until the point they're not excited. And so you can survive another year or two or three with that guy that has promise. I mean, think about it. If you're Arizona or the Giants, and you've already paid your guy, what are you going to do right now? Now, I mean, you look at that, and he was that guy, whether it was Kyler Murray, he was our guy. You know, he's going to be exciting. He's dynamic. He can move around. He's going to give us a chance. Or if it's Daniel Jones, he's big. He's athletic. He, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's just going to develop into this great. He played, you know, at Duke. He's super smart. Like, he's incredibly intelligent. Blah, blah, blah. Like, and deep down inside, if you're that franchise, you know what you know? this dude ain't taking us to the promised land. This dude does not pass the confetti test. Nope, I can't see confetti falling on him while he's holding up the Lombardi trophy.
But you can see, can't you, why that would appeal to a general manager if that's how he looks at these prospects. If he doesn't see a prospect that he truly, truly loves.
Right.
But if he takes the quarterback, think about what it's done. Because you're right, young quarterbacks drafted in the first round inspire a lot of hope, a lot of excitement, and it also creates that, because you know how the fan base is going to react if that young quarterback doesn't work out right away. There'll be a litany of excuses that will be made for that quarterback. Oh, the system's not right.
Right.
Oh, he doesn't have enough around him. Oh, the offensive coordinator stinks. Oh, the offensive, the head coach is a defensive-minded head coach. We gotta get on. So there'll be all these excuses made. And pretty soon, as a general manager, you're sitting back going, damn, I got 4 years out of this guy before I have to truly admit that he can't play.
Right.
I can see the appeal. I can see the appeal of that for a general manager.
You go through the when you figure out internally that he's not very good, and you figure that out pretty quickly, but then you go through the litany of excuses like you talked about. And so, hey man, we need to surround him with receivers. You know, then you do that. Well, our offensive line is not very good. Like, you do that, and then, you know, the next thing you know, you got 5 years that you've survived because you drafted some clown that can't play.
And because your fan base so desperately wants that guy to work out that they'll feed into the idea that, oh, get a new coach.
Right.
Or it's that offensive coordinator's
fault. But if
fault
you're,
or...
like, so, for instance, you're the Giants, and you pretty much know that Daniel Jones ain't taking you to the promised land. But you don't want to dip back into the – you're at number six. You don't want to dip back in, right? You don't want to admit that you made a mistake. So what do? Well, our offensive line's been horrible. We haven't had – you know, our receiving core has not been healthy. You know, Shepard can't stay healthy. You know, the other guys just aren't good. We drafted – Kadarius Toney couldn't catch the ball. It was a problem. We moved him to Kansas City. You know, on and on and on it goes. And ultimately, you know, we went out and got Kenny Golladay, and it was just a bust for us. And so it's the receiver. So there's a lot of really good receivers in this class. Let's get him one of those guys.
I'm watching what's going on and what I'm hearing coming out of L.A. with the Chargers, and I'm curious if – Jim Harbaugh would have been taking the same tack if he didn't already have an established starter in Justin Herbert. But, man, even the offensive lineman in you. Ooh. Hold on now. Even the offensive lineman in you. Is Harbaugh not taking this a little too far with his, like, everything revolves around the offensive line talk?
No, he is not. No.
Not a little too much?
Dude, I went and watched Harbaugh clips in my office. I put a tie on the doorknob, told my wife not to come in here. I'm watching the Chargers Harbaugh clips right now. Yeah, they had
football
some,
porn.
Yeah, they had a guy, I don't even know who it is, some guy talking about everything we do is going to be revolving around the offensive line, our strength and conditioning program, or, you know, everybody else is going to have to adjust. Our receivers are going to have to adjust because this is what we're doing it for. And I, you know, I get a little, shed a little tear. I was like, this is beautiful, man. This is beautiful. No, I think ultimately, if I was a Charger fan, man, I'd be so excited from the departure of the garbage that has been going on and the analytics, finding ways to lose via analytics organization that you have been over the years. I find that aspect of it. The other thing is, from a cultural standpoint, man, there is no position that I've ever been around that is more in it for the other guy because you realize how dependent you are on the other guy. So, you know, I say this all the time. Like, there's the most beautiful thing in the world is to walk in to an offensive line meeting on Monday after a game and watch guys fight each other to take responsibility for mistakes. Do you know how rare that is? I've been in a meeting where I gave up a sack or a pressure. And Gary Zimmerman or Tony Jones, my left tackle, would be like, oh, no, man. I had a pretty tight, defensive end technique on me, and I jumped out there. I was supposed to drag hand the three technique. You know, I was supposed to give him body presence before I got, and I had plenty of, or he was a wider technique. So I could had plenty of time to use a drag hand to protect Stink's outside shoulder and still get to my guy and my responsibility. Like, I just kicked out too fast. That's my response. Give me that. Give me the sack. I'll take the sack. And I'd be like, bullshit, Zim. That's not that way. And Tommy Nealon would go, no, that's mine. I got hung up on the nose guard. I had one technique. I was supposed to slide to the three technique so Stink could have gotten outside more. I had an inside presence and inside help. Like, I'm 100% responsible for that. And I'd be like, no, you're not, man. That's mine. I'm the dumbass that gave it up. And we would sit there and fight in a meeting to get a negative grade. Like, literally fight in a meeting.
Where does that come from? Where does that mindset come from? And is it pretty widespread among offensive lines?
I've never met an offensive line that wasn't put together that way. And if you have one of those guys, that guy will get excommunicated from the group. As a matter of fact, I had a guy in Denver, when I played in Denver, that did things that drove us all crazy. That wasn't cut from that cloth. And one day my old line coach said, I need to talk to you, private. He's like, yeah. Walk into a room, close the door and say, what is it with this guy? Why don't you guys like him? Why do you guys not like him? And I said, because he's not one of the group. He rolls in and checks out the film before we all watch it together so he can make up excuses and blame the other guys. I go, that's bullshit, and none of us want him around. That is unacceptable. And, you know, we ostracized that guy to the point of he knew we all hated him. And that's the way that room operates. And so I think from a cultural standpoint, that's the way it should be. You should all be in it for one another, and you should all be sacrificing for one another. And if you're not, you're not going to be a championship organization.
So this idea of Jim Harbaugh, everything revolves around the offensive line with the Chargers. Okay, I know that sounds great to you, but didn't Indy try that? Didn't Indy really try to build around a dominant offensive line? Didn't Dallas do that? Probably about 7-8 years ago, where they really loaded up on the offensive line. How did it work for them?
They were playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and ultimately, I think it worked well for them, but they didn't win championships. And you're talking about championships, you know, and then so.
Well, in the case of Indy and Dallas, those two teams, I mean, they didn't really even come close.
Well, they got to the playoffs, yeah. I mean, you get to the playoffs.
I'm talking about the Super
Bowl. Right. You get to the playoffs, then you've got everybody's got a chance. But then it comes down to, you know, there's a lot of other factors that obviously go into that. But I tell you what, you want to win 80% of the, you know, if you're just on a pick'em pool, like pick the team that's going to win, you want to win about 80% of your games that you pick. Just show me who has the dominant fronts,
yeah,
offensive and defensive lines. I'll show you who's going to win the game probably at an 80% clip. So it'll take you to a point. But you've got to be able to execute everywhere else, right? You've got to be able to have a guy that can cover a couple of warts.
But it's a heck of a foundation.
It's a great foundation.
Great foundation to have.
Correct.
You ready to get some questions?
Yeah, you bet.
From you guys, the great viewers. Here's one from Jordan Vanek. Mark, if you're a rookie coming into the NFL this year, which three coaches would you want to play for?
Three coaches I'd like to play for. I'd like to play for Kyle Shanahan, because I think there's probably nobody better in football at understanding everybody's issues. And I think that's so important. I think there are so many coaches that don't understand all the issues. They understand the issues on their side of the ball, or the issues in the passing game, and I don't think there's anybody better that understands everybody's problems and coaches to overcome those problems.
Okay.
Same division. I'd say the same thing for Sean McVay. I think Sean does an exceptional job of understanding his players, understanding what they're trying to do, educating his players, You know, you sit down with a Sean McVay coach player and you're talking to a guy that really understands football. And so I think that would be that would be a guy that would be on my list. I tell you, a guy that's getting a second opportunity to be a head coach in this league, Dan Quinn. Because I think Dan Quinn has an ability to connect with the guys he coaches. And, like, it's a brutal business. And, you know, you got to make tough decisions on cutting people and things of that nature. But I think there's a genuine love for his players that it's real. And I watched the way he's operated as a coach in Atlanta and how his guys feel about him. And so I think that's a guy that I'd like to play for.
No Andy Reid.
Andy Reid would steal my chicken nuggets. Yes. Let me have a little bit of them nuggets. You're right. All of a sudden, you see a little hand. Yeah.
Great.
I don't want anybody stealing my nuggets.
I got you. Yeah. Andy Reid, you'd make the list.
You're on my list.
But Mark doesn't want you to take his nuggets.
No, I don't want you to steal my food, Andy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his corn. He's a big believer in corn.
That's right.
Leave his corn alone.
Leave my corn alone.
Leave his corn. Here's another question for you. Mark, what should the Bears do with the ninth pick? We know what they're doing with the first pick.
Yeah.
What about the ninth pick?
You know, I see people all the time talk about that ninth pick as, you know, I've seen a bunch of mock drafts with like a receiver or something like that in there. Dude, I'd either get one of the tackles. There's a bunch of offensive tackles that are supposed to go really high and supposed to be really good. And, you know, they've drafted tackles over the last couple of years, but shoot, moving from outside as a tackle to inside is a pretty easy move. You got guys on both sides of you. You're playing in a phone booth. So a guy that you're not sure can be your all-time tackle, if you draft a tackle and move that guy inside, I think that's an easy transition. I think it strengthens and bolsters your offensive line. Or like a guy that's a big-time edge, big-time or big-time three technique. I think something on the line of scrimmage, either defensively or offensively, is where I would go if I was Chicago Bears. Because you went out and you got Keenan Allen, who's awesome. Yeah. DJ Moore the year before, who's an awesome player at the quarterback position. You've got Kmet at the tight end position, who's really, you know, really improving. I think you have – I think you're fine. I think you're fine there. And ultimately, I think – you know, you beat some people up with a rookie quarterback. You take some pressure off that guy. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of these teams, you take a lineman, you take a tackle in the first round. It's kind of a wah, wah, wah. Remember Detroit?
Yeah.
It took Penei Sewell. And people were like, yeah, all right. And turned out to be the best pick they possibly could have made.
But Dan Campbell would tell you, and I've asked him several times, who's the best player on your team? Without hesitation, Penei Sewell.
But see, the Bears have the real ability here to do something that's really easy for their fans to like, because you take the quarterback, then you take the lineman. Mm-hmm. Now you can kind of put them together as a package deal, as opposed to just taking the lineman by himself. This way you've already, since you're getting the quarterback, it's freed you up.
Right.
You don't have to go the easy way and just take a receiver to pair with the quarterback.
Right.
You can do what the smart thing is, and take that lineman and go, hey, here's our quarterback, and here's his whoopee for the next 10 years.
Right, and their GM is a former offensive lineman.
Right,
so I think that's the direction I'd go.
Okay. All right, good stuff. Thank you for the questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll always throw those out whenever we're doing one of these podcasts.
Yeah, science nerd, don't get at me. I don't even want to hear about it anymore. For everybody involved in the Sneak Truth podcast, I'm Mark Schler with Mike Evans. Thank you so much for being a part of it, and we'll be back with you later on in the week.